Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
These are players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor. You can listen to this show on whatever you get your favorite podcast and on TigerRag.com. Shortly after the show is over, you can catch it on there, re-listen to the show. We're now joined by Mike Dettillier, WWL radio extraordinaire, NFL draft expert, and general sports expert. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you, Glenn.
Great, great. We were just talking about the man with the plan, Lane Kiffin, a few minutes ago. Mike, you've known Lane and known of his career for a long time. What do you think of Lane as far as what got him to LSU at this point? What did you think of him as he went on through his career up to this point?
It's the perfect fit for today's NIL era, transfer portal era. He's worried about today, okay? And you can only control for 2026. You can have plans for 2027, but you can only control 2026. So I think he's the perfect coach, to be honest with you, in the era that we're covering today. And I give him a lot of credit for his ability to find people that fit what he does. Come on, you and I have been in this business a long time. When has Ole Miss been relevant other than maybe a rocket shot year? And look what he was able to do at Ole Miss and bring him to national acclaim. And some really came close to playing in the national championship game this year. And, you know, you think about Trinidad Chambliss. He wasn't the guy when the season started. Wasn't the guy in the summer. I interviewed the guy at the Manning camp that was supposed to be the guy.
That's right, Austin Simmons.
Yeah, Austin was supposed to be the man. And he was thrilled about this was going to be his year. And, you know, he would take over for Jackson Dartin. And it was Trinidad. And you think about Kawan Lacy. Was Kawan Lacy a major player at Missouri? The answer is no. You get a transfer guy that's your place kicker who's fabulous. And the fact that they can run the ball as well as they have is really something to say because they aren't recruiting 4- and 5-star recruits along their offensive line. And yet, Lane's running game, and a lot of that he picked up at Southern Cal in working with Pete Carroll when they had that tandem of Lindell White and Reggie Bush, still sticks with him today in their ability to run the football. And I think it's underrated for what he does. He is very good about delegating authority to assistant coaches. And the other part, too, is a great hire in Billy Glasscock. When you think about in the transfer portal, I think they brought in 30 kids a year ago at Ole Miss, which is a big chunk of your roster. And the impact they had, now he's got 43 this year, to find players that fit what you do and understanding the type of scheme that they run offensively and defensively, That to me was the amazing part of watching them maneuver in a very short period of time, the players they wanted and getting a big chunk of those guys and adding depth to the lineup. Because a lot of times we saw this with Coach O and also with Brian Kelly. When a player would go down, the depth was a Mount Everest fall off for him.
Exactly.
And he's been able to do that.
If you're just tuned in, you know who you're listening to. You're listening to Mike Tellier of WWL Radio here on Tiger Rag Radio. Mike, how long do you think Lane is going to be able to keep Charlie Weiss Jr.? I mean, he could have left a couple of times since he left Ole Miss. And how impressed with you of him as a play caller and offensive coordinator?
I think Charlie's an absolute top-of-the-line play caller. And you may have him for 2026. I'm not sure about 2027. I think the NFL is going to come ring the doorbell and get him out, or he lands a head coaching job in college football. It'll be one of the two for Charlie Weiss Jr., but it's all about, I think, putting people around you, Glenn, that can elevate the talent. Because coaching still matters in this business. Yeah, talent wins, but coaching's the 1B in being able to develop and get people in the right positions to make plays. I think it's probably a one-year deal for Charlie Weiss Jr., and either he becomes a head coach at the collegiate level or he becomes an offensive coordinator in the NFL.
Well, Mike, this time of year I miss your old NFL draft book. I used to read it like the Bible every spring. Let's turn our attention to what's going on in Indianapolis right now with the NFL Combine. And it appears that Garrett Nussmeier significantly helped himself at the Senior Bowl. He's being discussed as a possible third-round pick. What do you think Garrett can do for himself, and where do you see him going? Where do you see him doing for himself at the Combine, and where do you see him going in the draft?
This is not a huge class, numbers talent-wise, at quarterback. And we know Mendoza and Ty Simpson will go in round one. Mendoza is going to be the first pick. I suspect Ty Simpson will go anywhere from 18 to 25, 26 in round one. I think the third guy to come off the board is Garrett Nussmeier. One, he's got to prove that he's healthy, and we saw at the Senior Bowl, he was impressive throwing the football, and he looked to be pretty close to being back completely from the injury. One of the things at the Combine will be an extensive medical. So everybody's going to get a look at the abdominal injury and everything else that occurred with him. I'll be honest, Glenn, supply and demand, I do not think he gets out of round two.
Wow, that's impressive.
Hey, Mike, this is Andre here. I just wanted to ask you, I mean, you've been kind of watching the Combine for so many years, and for guys like these LSU receivers that are going to participate this week, before the season, everybody kind of hyped up how fast these guys were. Now they're really going to be able to prove it, even though they didn't have the most productive seasons that they wanted. Mike, how do you see those guys maybe making a name for themselves this week? And is there any early standouts that you might see having a good day? I know Berrion Brown was one of those guys that had a really good senior day kind of week in Mobile.
With Berrion, right off the bat, he can help me as a kickoff return man. He's really good at that. The one thing I didn't see from Nick Anderson, Berrion Brown, Chris Hilton, they did not get separation from defensive backs this year. They did not. They were like stuck to him like they had Velcro. One guy did, Aaron Anderson. Now, he's not the biggest guy. He probably will not end up being the fastest one. But you talk about a little playmaker, and that's Aaron Anderson. And his ability to work out the slot, you could use him on the jet sweeps, wide receiver screens. And I thought he became a much better route runner downfield as a receiver. I think he's the one guy in a bunch I get more people ask about than anyone else. Chris Hilton is on the all-potential team, okay? You don't have a lot of production there, no matter what. Barrion Brown had more production receiving at Kentucky, but he does bring that element as a kickoff return guy that is important in today's world. And then with Nick, great freshman year, and then injuries, and then, like I say, last year and watching him, he didn't get separation from defensive backs. I think Anderson's the guy. I think if you looked at it, he's the one guy I'd pick out of the group of receivers and say that guy can play at the NFL level at wide receiver. The other thing I would do with Aaron, having watched him at Edna Carr, is you have automatically become our punt return guy until you prove you can't do it. I think he can do that. Just his elusiveness and his ability to make people miss out in space, I think he'd fit that very well.
And where do you see Mansoor Delane going, the cornerback? Does he have a chance to be the first one taken?
No question. I think he'll go anywhere from probably pick 9 through pick 13 in round 1, somewhere in that range. What got lost in this season of disappointment was how good he was.
Oh, yes.
And Glenn, okay, we watched Stingley. We saw some of the, you know, Claiborne, Patrick Peterson.
Tre'Davious.
Some of the other guys. My goodness, you watch this guy play. He was baiting other quarterbacks to throw in his area. Do you remember him getting beat on a deep pattern this year?
I don't think so.
Now, where he would throw it sometimes was a little short pass and hoping that maybe the receiver could break a tackle and get downfield. But, you know, he impressed me with his open field tackling skills. And you can get bored as a corner when they don't kind of go after you. Because your mind's set on, I want to make a play. But then they refuse to throw in your area. I go back to the Arkansas game. Arkansas moves the football all the way downfield. They get inside the 5-yard line. I'm not sure who was the genius that called this play, but they had a little corner pattern set up for the receiver to kind of sit next to the chalk. And, you know, Green would get him the ball. If you watch that play really well, Mansoor Delane suckered him into throwing the ball. And you saw that from the moment it left Green's hands, it was an interception.
Wow, that's what Deion used to do.
In essence, he was, I dare you to throw it at me. Then I'll give you a little cushion. And then he plant and drive so hard to the football. I think for most scouts, they want to see him run. The 40-yard dash thing is going to be – they're going to watch. But I have no doubt, in watching college football this year, he was the best cover guy, a one-on-one. And what was so funny, we had Willie Fritz on the week of the Texas Bowl. And his first comment to me is, I'm sure glad Mansoor Delane's not playing in this game. And so Bobby and I look at one another, and I told him, you know why, Bob? He's going to go after Pickett. And he was like, Mike, you might be right. Sure enough, they targeted after the freshman. They went after DJ in that game. And I think that was something almost Fritz was telling you ahead of time. Man, thank God he ain't out on that field, because it gives us an opportunity.
Well, you heard it here. Mansoor Delane going to be the first cornerback taken, and Garrett Nussmeier will go in the second round. Thanks a lot for joining us, Mike. Have a great night. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Y'all take care. Thank you.
Okay, have a good one. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio. We're going to talk to Reed Darcy from the Baton Rouge Advocate at 7:30 about women's basketball. We'll be back with more right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag Executive Editor. And Andre, can you check the LSU baseball score? They're playing McNeese right now.
It is 4-2. McNeese just put up a four spot in the top of the second. Marcos Paz had some command issues. I think he walked a few, gave up a few hits, and they find themselves in a little bit of a hole.
4-2 in what inning?
Only the bottom of the second, so there's plenty of ball to play. But
so the winning streak is in danger.
I jinxed Marco Paz by talking about how good he was.
I always feel like the freshman – Jay does this every year. He usually puts a freshman – last year it was Schmidt. They always struggle at – the very top half of the season when it comes to these sorts of situations.
Well, that's what these
games are for.
Non-conference games are for sure.
So LSU will come through like in the fifth, sixth, or seventh inning with 24 runs or something like that.
Would probably be.
I know they have a 10-run rule victory this year that they were trailing in the seventh inning, 5-4 to Kent State.
It wasn't Indiana. It was Milwaukee. Was it
Milwaukee? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So it's amazing they can explode all of a sudden. But we're going to continue talking about the LSU players in Indianapolis right now. We discussed Garrett Nussmeier, Aaron Anderson, Mansoor Delane, Berrien Brown, Chris Hilton a little bit. Xavion Thomas is also there, wide receiver. Bauer Sharp. The two defensive ends that transferred in last year, Patrick Payton and Jack Pyburn, and safety A.J. Halsey is probably going to go high. And then, of course, linebacker Harold Perkins. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes.
I think let's talk about Perkins a little bit. But before we do that, let's talk about Halsey. I think Halsey will probably be
second, third round.
But I think he is a sleeper. He's going to have a good long 10-11 year career.
He's a safety though, so they usually go at cornerbacks. But I agree with you. He was a solid player, really a star player last year at safety for LSU.
He's just got the instinct, man.
Yeah. Those were two really
and
good gets.
Physical. Now his size is a little disconcerting for the NFL because he's not that big of a guy, but he is a physical, instinctive player. I think he's got a long career ahead of him.
And speaking of sleepers, Harold Perkins.
Well, see, you know, Perkins, when he was a freshman, when he had his breakout against Arkansas as his freshman year, I think everybody would have predicted that he would have left LSU early, of course, before the injury and been a first-round draft pick. That's not going to happen. I do think that Harold Perkins is like a man without a position.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's going to have the right situation, the right coach, and he might be a specialty player.
I think he's going to be a third down edge rusher.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, somebody – I just see him going to the Cowboys or somebody like that, you know. I agree with you. He's going to be a specialty defensive specialist, and I think that's going to be an edge rusher.
Andre?
It's such a confusing – Or not confusing, it's just so weird. You know, you really don't know where he's going to fit in. But you could argue that NFL teams value his skill set more than, you know, LSU's defense would have this year, right? Like, no,
Under Matt House.
Or under Matt House.
They couldn't figure out what to do with the guy.
Well, I guarantee you he's not going to be an inside linebacker.
Yeah. No, he will be an outside linebacker.
Even Blake Baker played with that for a while, trying to make him an inside linebacker before he finally realized, no, we're putting him on the outside. And, you know, he's a guy that showed flashes, and somebody's going to take him because they're going to see some of those flashes on film, and he's probably going to do real well at the, you know, the pro day and at the combine.
Yeah, and the reason I think he's going to be a specialized edge rusher is, you know, I hear a lot of people, a lot of former LSU players throughout the course of the last couple of years talked about how he had gotten much better in coverage, as you have to do when you're playing an outside linebacker position. I don't see it. I know he got a couple of interceptions. I thought his coverage was average at best for a college player. I don't think it's going to suffice or make it at all at the NFL level.
Right. And Chris Hilton, he'd probably be in the mid to late rounds, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking late, six or seven.
Yeah. And Patrick Payton and Jack Pyburn, they're probably middle at best, probably late.
I think those two are two guys who were really hurt by LSU's very mediocre season this year. I think they both had opportunities that if LSU would have been in the college football playoffs, they would have been a big part of that. They were good, solid players, but I don't think they did a lot to increase or improve their stock in the NFL, and I think they've got an uphill battle going in. Nothing against either one of them. They're both great athletes, but I just don't think that their value is that high. Their stock is that high right now.
All right, we're going to wrap it up on the combine right now, and we're going to bring Reed Darcy in to talk about the LSU women's basketball team, which is coming off two great victories after the loss to South Carolina. They appear to be getting it back together again. We're going to talk to Reed about that, and we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag executive editor and producer, superstar, Andre Champagne. And we've been joined by Reed Darcy of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Reed was in Oxford last week when the Ole Miss Rebels went 0-17 in the fourth quarter. That was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that. I was watching on television. And Reed, have you ever covered anything like that, man? What were you thinking as that was transpiring?
No, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And it's not just 0-17 in the fourth quarter. They missed, Glenn, 25 of their last 27 shots.
So, wow.
That's great defense. Great defense.
They go down 13. Down 13 in the third quarter, and it's like I pretty much had the story written of LSU losing, and of course I had to tear it up, start over, and scrambled. You know, that's how it goes sometimes.
So you handwrite your stories because you were going to tear it up, so you weren't obviously doing it on your computer. I'm joking.
No.
The Advocate doesn't give him a computer. He's got to call it in.
Okay, but okay. So missing 25 of your last 27 shots, was it LSU's defense or was it just poor shooting?
Well, I think what changed for Ole Miss is when LSU went to that zone defense, Kimmel, he never really uses zone, but she did, I think, kind of as a last-ditch effort against Ole Miss. And that kind of got them out of rhythm. You know, it did a good job of slowing down Cody McMahon. Like, she was really in a good rhythm before they went to that zone. And then once they did, they kind of cut off her driving lanes. It really prevented her from getting downhill, which is really the bread and butter of their offense. So I think, you know, that was a good adjustment by Mulkey and her staff. And I think it really helped things. But you know, they also just missed a lot of, you know, looks that they made in the first half. So a lot of good looks around the rim. You know, I think they got open shots throughout that stretch. They just didn't go in. And
oh yeah, they had some
just
close
snowball.
Right, they had some close range shots. At
but and then they turn around coming off of that performance, and they host Missouri, and Missouri misses 111 shots, and LSU gets 72 rebounds. I don't 111 was exaggerating, but they didn't. They only shot like what 29% for the game, or 28%, something like that.
24,
Reed?
I think.
24.
Yeah. It's like I've never really seen 72 rebounds before either. That number is just pretty wild, and 30 on the offensive glass. 72 is a NCAA era program record, and 30 is too shy of the program record. They had 32 rebounds, I think, at some point in the 90s. So that's almost a program record. Impressive stuff, especially since they were playing mostly small ball throughout that game against Missouri.
Yeah, Reed, this is Andre. Just to kind of go off of that, that was a very fun lineup that we saw out there going small. And Kim did kind of say that it's going to be rare to see that again. But how I guess, maybe they do see a smaller lineup when the NCAA tournament rolls around in those first and second rounds. I guess, how big is it for them to keep going to that lineup if that is the case? And what would that do for the bigs to kind of rest them going forward in an NCAA tournament kind of run like that?
Yeah, it's obviously huge. Having that malleability is going to be really important in the SEC tournament or even the NCAA tournament, because you never know what kind of team you're going to run into. And it could give you some kind of a different look to throw at different kind of teams that have different kinds of complexions. You know, I think most teams that LSU will encounter in the next few weeks are going to have a traditional big on the floor, which means that Kim Mulkey is probably going to use mostly her normal lineup, where she has one of either Maya Joyner or Kate Koval on the floor at all times. But in case they run into a smaller team, you know, one that plays like Missouri does, or one that plays like Tennessee does coming up on Thursday, then I think that they've shown that they can go small and it won't really affect them on either offense or defense. I don't think we'll see it too often moving forward, but Kim Mulkey has shown that she's not afraid to pull it out of her back pocket. And it's been successful. You know, I thought, you know, if you have either Zakiya Johnson or Grace Knox at that five spot with four guards, I think that can be really effective. And even Michaela Williams at the five, I've never seen them do that before, but they tried it out against Missouri. Obviously, it worked very well. That's one thing that's different, I think, about this LSU team, is that they can go big and they can have Joyner and Koval in there, and that can be an effective group for them, but they can also go small. So Mulkey has that optionality, and that's one thing that makes them a little more dangerous in March than I think they have been in the last couple of years.
Reed, LSU is now number six in the nation. They're 24-4 overall, 10-4 in the SEC. They beat Tennessee on Thursday night in the Assembly Center on senior night, in the PMAC, I should say, on senior night. The game's at 5 p.m., is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So if they win that game, they lock up a double round bye in the SEC tournament. Is that important for them to do?
Yeah, it's pretty important. I think if you look at it, I think there's still a small chance that LSU can get a one seed in the NCAA tournament. But in order to do that, they probably have to win the whole thing. They win the SEC tournament, go on a 7-game win streak at this point. It's difficult. But it's not impossible. And I think in order to do that, you want to set yourself up to win only three games to get to that point, not four, where you'd have to be if you're starting from outside that top four in the SEC. So, yeah, getting a double bye, I think it's one of their goals that they set before the season. They've done it every year under Kim Mulkey so far, and it looks like they're gonna do it again. They just got to get one of these two games going forward.
Well, South Carolina at 13-1 right now is going to be the number one seed going into the SEC tournament. And they'll probably be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Vanderbilt is second right now at 11-3. And I think Texas is right behind them at, what, 11-3 also? I don't have that in front of me. But they're third right now, if I'm not mistaken. And if I'm wrong about that, correct me. But are those not just four of the best teams in the SEC, counting LSU, but are they four of the best teams in the country?
Yes, I believe that they're four of the eight best teams in the country, and I think that's probably how it will look come Selection Sunday when the NCAA Selection Committee kind of unveils the full bracket. You know, that's the way it shook out this year. You know, I think four of the top eight teams, so four of those number one and then number two seeds, are going to be from the same conference, and that's the SEC, and that's how good it's been. That's how good the top of the league has been. But it also shows that the league has quite a bit of depth. You know, if you think about Oklahoma isn't far behind those teams. Kentucky isn't far behind. Ole Miss isn't far behind. So the league has all kinds of depth, and I think what that will come into play with is that the selection committee is going to have to make some tough decisions when they're putting together the bracket. Do they pair, say, LSU or South Carolina in the same region, or do they pair maybe South Carolina or Vanderbilt in the same region, or do they try to avoid those matchups between SEC teams as much as they can until the Final Four? I think it's going to be pretty difficult, you know, assuming those four teams are in the mix later on. I think it's going to be difficult for them to avoid those matchups, which they try to do as much as best they can. So we could see, you know, LSU a situation where they're in the NCAA tournament and they have to run through either Texas or South Carolina, maybe whoever gets that last number one seed in order to get to the Final Four, which would be pretty interesting.
Hey, Reed, can you stay with us through the break?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. We'll be back with more Reed Darcy and LSU women's basketball. That the Tigers host Tennessee 5 p.m. Thursday. That game is on ESPN. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. We thank Reed Darcy for joining us for another segment from the Baton Rouge Advocate as we're continuing to discuss the LSU women's basketball team.
So, Reed, you know, you were talking last segment about how LSU is clearly one of the top eight teams in the country. The SEC has four of the top eight, with South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Texas, and LSU. So that means they'll be a number two seed, more than likely, in the SEC tournament, which means, I mean, not the SEC, the NCAA tournament, which means they'll be home. You say they have a chance at a number one seed still, albeit remote. But either way, they'll probably be at home for the first two rounds. Kind of accustomed to that. That's Mulkey's goal every year. Big thing that Mulkey said in one of the press conferences, and I don't remember her exact words, but I think it was after the last, you know, 72 rebound performance against and 53-point win over Missouri, which was the largest margin of victory in I don't know how long for LSU's women's basketball team, but
2008.
Yeah, since 2008. Thanks, Andre. But the thing that she said that caught my attention was she really likes this team. This is a good team, a really good team. And she stopped short of saying one of the best in the country, but I think that was heavily implied. But she said she's not sure how they're going to perform when they get down to win or go home in the NCAA tournament. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, it was kind of reminded me of just how young they are. You know, sometimes you forget that there's a lot of freshmen, there's a lot of sophomores in that core rotation that Mulkey likes to use, right? So right now, if you include Bella Hines, who's starting to get a little more run, she's going with nine players kind of on the court throughout a game, and nine-player rotation, and think about it, three, four, five of them are all sophomores. And you've only got two seniors, you know, Flajae Johnson and Amaya Joyner are the only two seniors in that group. Obviously, Flajae and Michaela have been there before. They've gone deep into the tournament. But the rest of their supporting cast is a pretty young group, which I think kind of makes it impressive to see, you know, exactly what they've accomplished so far. And I think the kind of numbers that they're putting up is pretty cool to see. But going forward in March in the tournament, the games slow down, they get more physical, they get chippier. And so I think she's kind of wanting to see how some of her freshmen like Grace Knox and Zakiya Johnson kind of respond to those new environments, and she wants to see how they handle it, because it is kind of an unknown, and it is a reminder that, you know, she does have a very good team, but she does have a very young team, and she doesn't quite know how they're going to respond to those kinds of environments.
You know, speaking of Grace Knox, a freshman, extremely passionate player, makes a lot of she's tough. She's a really tough player and makes some really good hardcore plays for LSU down low. I think she's an important contributor. Didn't see her against Missouri because of what happened with her in Ole Miss at Ole Miss. But also Michaela Williams, who is obviously, you know, like you said, very experienced and a team leader, a junior, and you didn't see her in the second half. Both of those, the second half at Ole Miss. So Williams missing the second half at Ole Miss and then Knox missing the Missouri game completely were both coaches' decisions. Was there any explanation given by Mulkey for those lack of presence on the court for Williams at Ole Miss and Knox at against Missouri?
So, no, not really. I think with Knox, she kind of tried to explain how it was kind of more of a basketball decision based on how the game shook out and the kind of lineups that she wanted to use. But I think, you know, we can assume that, you know, it kind of probably had something to do with the Ole Miss game. If you remember, she had the hard foul on Cody McMahon. She picked up a tech, and then the broadcast kind of captured her mouthing off at the Ole Miss student section. And I think she gave an interview to Jacques Doucet either yesterday or today and kind of said that she apologized to her team or to her coaches for that. We know what she kind of said on the bench after and said that it hurt her team. So I'd imagine that was probably had something to do with why she didn't play against Missouri. But Kim Mulkey did not say that explicitly, and she also did not say explicitly why she kept Michaela on the bench for the second half of the Ole Miss game. You know, we asked her right after the game, and she said just simply it was coach's decision. And then we followed up with her after the Missouri game and just asking her, you know, hey, what were you trying to accomplish by leaving your best player on the floor in a game you kind of needed to win? And she didn't really want to get into it. I think she wants to keep that between her and Michaela. But
it's none of your business, Reed. Reed, it's none of your business.
But my read on it is that it's kind of a motivational tactic that she likes to use every now and then. Michaela wasn't playing very well in the first half, and she didn't really look like herself. So maybe she just sat her down and tried to get her attention and then just try to get her refocused. Maybe that's what she was trying to do. And clearly it looked like, I guess it worked. So we can't really question it now, because not only did they beat Ole Miss, but Michaela played pretty well next time out against Missouri.
Hey, Reed, we only have actually less than a minute right now, but what do you expect Thursday night against Tennessee? They are a talented team. They just haven't been playing that well lately.
They're a talented team that can be dangerous if they hit a bunch of three-pointers, but if they don't hit those threes, then there's no real way that they can win. I would expect LSU to win by a pretty decent margin, just because they can control a possessions battle so well. They can beat the press against Tennessee, and then they can rebound against that team, because Tennessee doesn't have a ton of size. So I'd expect LSU to win their last two games, go into Greenville and see what kind of damage they can do. Maybe they win the whole thing, maybe they don't, but I think you're probably looking at a two seed, either maybe in the NCAA tournament, and then we'll see what happens. You know, it could be interesting.
All right, Reed Dorsey, Baton Rouge Advocate, thanks a lot for your time. Good synopsis of the LSU women's basketball team. And we'll be back to wrap it up here at Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to the final segment of Tiger Rag Radio with Glenn Gilbo here, Tiger Rag editor and executive editor Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne, who does everything. Right now, the Tigers are trailing McNeese in the top of the fourth inning, 5-2. And the Cowboys have a man on third base. So
with no outs and already one run in this inning.
Maverick Grizzly on the hill for the Tigers. So they're in trouble, man. Yeah. I think they come back and win by the 10-run rule.
I don't know about that. It didn't look like they were hitting it very well in the past two innings.
They'll unlock it one inning, and it'll be over. Anyway.
Well, we had a good show. John Eads from WFB joined us. He was in Jacksonville watching the Tigers. And we had Scott Rabelais, who was also in Jacksonville and gymnastics expert. And then Mike Dettillier talked about Lane Kiffin and the combine with all the LSU players there. And then finally we wrapped up with Reed Darcy on the women's basketball team. You really think they have a shot at a number one seed? They would have to win the
SEC tournament, and they would get in over, say, a Texas right now who has that last one seed right now.
So
yes, it is very possible.
Wow. Yeah,
but don't forget what – who was it? Corey Diaz from The Advertiser was on a couple of weeks ago. He used to cover South Carolina.
Last week, yeah.
And he said that winning – against South Carolina in Greenville in the SEC tournament.
It's not likely.
Totally different referee situation there.
That's right, in Greenville, South Carolina. But, you know, I think the LSU women's team, there's no telling what they can do in the tournament. It really doesn't matter once they get in there because it's all about seeding and who they get matched up with and who gets upset in the other games.
I would argue, like last year, you kind of knew this LSU team was not going to make a Final Four. At least that was my thought. You knew they didn't have the firepower down low, really, to help Anissa Morrow out. But this year, it's such a weird feeling for me. It kind of feels like anything could really happen.
I agree with you because I don't think, and I've been watching it closely this year, South Carolina, UCLA, Texas, I do not see any team that LSU can't beat.
Even UConn.
Even UConn. Right. I left them out. I can't believe that. Tennessee was beating the heck out of UConn. They ended up losing, but they were beating the heck out of
Villanova UConn. Almost went and beat UConn the other weekend.
Yeah. And they came
and they had the lead. Yeah, they had the lead.
And they came so close to beating South Carolina. And the thing is, when their first couple of games in the tournament, it's probably going to be kind of a breath of fresh air to them coming out of the SEC because, that's just a bloodbath every game. And then, you play teams that haven't seen you. They don't have as much film and vice versa. But I think it's going to be interesting, man. I think they could make it to the Final Four.
So you got a number one baseball team, you got a number two gymnastics team, and you got a number six women's basketball team.
Number two golf team. You got a number four tennis team and a number five women's tennis team.
And a number one radio show, Tiger Rag Radio, which is about to sign off. Thanks for joining us. It's been a great night. We'll see you next Tuesday night on Tiger Rag Radio.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at tigerrag.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.